Ron and Anian.
Have you noticed, and I feel compelled to tell you this, did you know that I'm a liar?
I do know that. Especially after you sent me a picture of you in the suit without giving me a name and I didn't know who you were.
Oh, didn't I look good in that suit? I made that look good, huh? That was, so I kind of rocked it.
Every girl crazy about a shark dance man.
The car doctor.
So I parked my car under, a carport. How does this thing get its internet access? Is it through cellular? Is it through satellite or what? What happens if I'm in a place with no signal?
No, they're probably passing.
I can't start my car?
Well, Tom, I want to know where all these radio waves are going.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, we're breaking all the rules today, and thanks for coming back this hour. We actually held Mike over from a previous hour. We're not supposed to do that because in radio we're making, well, they taught me a million years ago when dirt was invented and I was young that in radio you're making bread and it's got to be unique for each hour. Well, we held Mike from Illinois over. He's a electric vehicle driver out Springfield, Illinois way, and we thought he was such a great caller. We thought his points were candid and on target. We wanted to talk to him some more. Mike, you're still there. Thanks for waiting.
You bet I am. It's good to hear your voice again.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your patience. You know, sometimes the mechanics of radio, no pun intended, gets in the way. When we pulled away from the end of last show, my questions to you, to recap for the audience and to refresh, and you remind me if I missed something, Mike, was, you know, why electric vehicles now at this point in your life was one of them. We talked a little bit about, you know, how I didn't know. I looked it up during the break, but 20% of electricity in the U.S. is generated by coal, 40% by natural gas, and the other 20% by nuclear, which I didn't know that. I learned something today. So 80% of electricity created in this country is done by means other than renewables. And my question to you at that point had been, you know, is it an electric vehicle now at this point because you're concerned about, you know, you're trying to clean up the air? Does that still meet your criteria, or would you do it differently had you known that beforehand?
Well, I told you before the break about my wife's car. I told her she had a coal-burning car.
Right.
Since then, she's had me put a solar array on the roof, and she only charges her car when the sun is shining.
Okay.
So she now does have an emissions-free car. And you're right. There is a degree of interest in the environment. Hers is, she's head over heels for it, and I'm married. I go along with her.
Sure.
But the cost is something. Cost is not an issue in our life.
Right.
But it seems important. However, there are two other negatives we haven't talked about. One is the carbon footprint of my car versus the identical car with gasoline power.
Okay.
And the second is the disposal of these batteries once they go kaput.
Right.
Now, I'm told the carbon footprint is such that my car has to go 50,000 miles before it breaks even with it in a gasoline version. I won't have the car that long, but somebody will, and sometime over 50,000 miles, the car will start earning its way. There's nothing I can say at the moment about the disposal of the batteries. In the literature I read, they seem to be making some progress, but we still got a long way to go on that end of it.
So then I ask you this question, and I don't know this answer either. And, you know, don't think because I have a microphone in front of me that I've got all the answers. I'm just as curious as the next guy to a large degree. I was actually speaking, and the gym that I go to, one of the other fellows that works out with us on occasion, Jesse, he's got a Tesla. And I've talked to him pretty much the same questions I'm asking you that I ask all the electric vehicle owners. And to you, I said, as I said to Jesse, I said, so, you know, if I ask you what's it like to find charging stations right now, you're going to tell me it's not an issue, right?
It isn't for for me.
Okay.
My charging station is, I've got 240 in the garage, and that's really where I charge.
Okay. But what's going to happen when every car you see on the road is electric? And do you think the power grid, even in the next 10 years, has the ability to support every vehicle on the road being electric? Or maybe that's too dramatic a question. I don't know.
And I'm not able to speak to that issue. I believe that as the use of, I don't think the use of electric vehicles will expand at a significant rate until the infrastructure to support them expands. And, you know, in my case, you know, your friend with a Tesla, he goes 400 miles and he's SOL. He's got to charge that baby up.
Right.
I go 400 miles, I pull into a gas station because I've got a plug-in hybrid.
Right. And I think what you're driving is the way. I think the plug-in hybrid is clearly the way over an all-electric. I really do.
Yeah, I believe it is. Also, although the only other thing I told my wife once is, I said, you know, I really should have bought a Tesla for if we ever go on the road, I can rent a car.
Right. Right.
But we don't, you know. Issue doesn't come up.
I understand. Well, listen, you know what the two most important words in a marriage are, Mike?
Yes, dear.
Yes, dear. Right, exactly. Oh, you're in the club. boy, ain't that the truth, brother. I don't know.
It is, my friend, it is. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Listen, I think you make some excellent points. I think you've got a good grip on the situation. I will leave this for you to think about, and maybe in the future you'll grace us with your presence and give us some more feedback. I think the future of electric vehicles is a gradual one. I think it should be geared towards delivery vehicles, utility vehicles, you know, UPS, FedEx, mail. Some police vehicles should be electric. Emergency vehicles, if we can prove them reliable, electric, that kind of a thing.
But
buses. But electric for the masses? Start counting the number of cars around you at any given time on the road and multiply that as you see fit out into the universe and think to yourself, my God, where will all this electricity come from? Where will the batteries go? And, you know, it just becomes, listen, we're going to try and explain it to you guys in the future. We've reached out to a gentleman. Is it Mark Mills, Tom? Mark Mills or Mark Miller? I forget. Miller. Mark Miller. He is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. We're going to be talking to Mark.
No, Mark Mills.
Mark Mills, I'm sorry. We're going to be talking to him with regards to the math of how all this will work and will it work. And that's going to be an upcoming interview. We haven't set the date yet. We're working on it.
You pose an interesting dilemma for this whole electric thing.
Well, and, you know, all I'm trying to do is get us to think. You know, I mean, full disclosure, I'm at that point where I won't see, you know, an electric vehicle future is not going to hurt me financially, and it's not going to put me out of business. I don't have an axe to grind. You know, I really don't. I'll be sitting by the sidelines going, well, I guess it happened, and okay, you know, we'll deal with it. I'll be long gone before the electric vehicle becomes a complete, you know, dominance of the market like the internal combustion engine is today. I just think it's my responsibility to point out where I see the holes, because I just, you know, to me, the emperor has no clothes and nobody wants to admit it. And that's the part that kind of kills me.
Yeah, if it were to happen today, we would be in over our head.
Yeah, but
and there's got to be a few decades, I think, growth of change before it really is has a potential to be
spot on. But yet, California says by 2035, you're not allowed to sell an internal combustion engine vehicle in the state. That's it. That's the cutoff.
Yeah, I went to college in California. They have S for brains.
Yeah, I understand.
It's not going to happen.
Where's the logic? Well, everybody keeps, and you know, Mike, I get that. Everybody keeps saying it's not going to happen. And tell your wife, you know, I'm grateful for people like her that are so concerned about the environment. But where is the logic? It makes no sense. And that's...
Well, that's because politicians are pulling the strings.
Well, I understand that part, too. So
if you want to, if you could go there and explain it to them, I think it might be, our problems might be solved.
Listen, if somebody wants to call Congress and say, we got a guy that you should talk to, I'm glad to go to Washington, D.C. Tom will film the whole thing.
I know one of our senators, so I'll see if I can bring your name up.
You know, I just, to me, it's got to make sense. You know, when I was a kid, and then I'm going to go. When I was a kid and my dad was still alive, my dad was an airline mechanic. He worked on the president's plane during the war. He explained mechanics to me at a very fundamental level, all right? You know, he'd always tell me, 2 + 2 has to be 4. You can't make it 5. If you're going to make it 5, you're doing something wrong. So it's got to make sense. I never forgot that speech. That and make sure you're right and then go ahead. And remember, you can't get out at 10,000 feet and check the carburetor's mixture. Make sure it's right before you leave the hangar. I never forgot that one either.
I wish you could explain that 2 + 2 to some of our schools.
Well, they won't listen. Listen,
thank you for your time, sir.
Listen, Michael, thank you. You give us a call back anytime. It was a pleasure. It was a real pleasure. You be well.
You're a good man. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this.
It on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now back to Ron.
Hey, Tom, what do you think? We could do like a little series. The Car Doctor goes to Washington and you could film
we
the
could
whole
do
thing.
That
yeah yeah, hang yeah like that.
But you know, my only fear is you'd end up in the Oval Office in the big chair.
Well, think about that.
That's a scary thought.
Well, it is. Of course I would. You know, I enjoyed talking to Mike. You know what, I enjoyed. He's one of the few electric vehicle owners I've spoken to, and I'm not saying they're all bad. It's just that he was willing to listen, and it was an exchange of ideas, which is what this is supposed to be about.
Yeah, he and I had talked off the air before he went on, and he's very very intelligent. And he had some good points,
yeah.
And that's all we ask.
That's all we ask.
You know,
it's how's it going to happen? And listen, I learned something today. I looked it up, so. So 80% of electricity produced in the country is by means other than renewable. So that means, and 40% of that 80%, so half of the electricity in this country, according to the government statistics I just read, half is produced by nuclear. And even with that, we still don't have enough to produce enough electricity for an all-electric future. It's kind of crazy.
And you know, the hybrid makes sense.
It does.
It does make sense. If you want to if you want to make a contribution and go electric, even partially electric, it makes a lot of sense.
Right. Now, I was reading an article this week and I found it again and I put that up on our website also from Toyota. I believe it was the vice president of Toyota, but the president of Toyota has also said that an all-electric car future is not the way of the future. And Toyota, you've heard of them. They've been around a while. They know something about the car business, is saying that an all-electric future is not feasible for a lot of reasons, blah, blah, blah. Toyota's saying this, not me. And they point out that, you know, it's a hybrid or a hydrogen drive. Toyota is starting to talk about hydrogen drive drivetrains, which, you know, that's been kicked around more than a few times, and that has some merit. I think that's worth looking at too. So anyway, I see you got some phone calls. Let's go to Jamar in Toronto with an 08 VW Rabbit and some questions with the transmission. Jamar, welcome to the Car Doctor. Thanks for hanging on so long.
Hey, Ron. Thank you. I have a 2008 Volkswagen Rabbit. Recently, once it gets warm, like when it's cold, it's fine. It shifts fine. But then once it gets warm, then it'll go into limp mode.
Okay.
The RPM will rise, and then all the shifts will light up. I got it checked, The dealer said it was a N88 transmission solenoid
N89.
Okay. So they said N88, but
all right,
whatever.
But the trans solenoid is what they said.
Yeah, it keeps that's the circuit that keeps opening. But then when it's cold, then the circuit is fine.
Okay.
So I had another guy check it, and he's saying I should just change the valve body. But the dealer's saying don't even worry about changing the valve body, just get a new reman. Should I just get a reman if I'm going to remove the valve body?
A reman valve body?
No, a reman trans.
How many miles on the car, Jamar?
200,000. Okay. 200,000.
So did they give you a price to change the solenoid?
No, they won't do it. They won't do it. They will only do it if I get a reman trans.
And why did
I know why they said it,
but I want to hear you tell me. Why did they say they won't do it? Because of the mileage, right?
Well, they didn't. Yeah, the mileage, and they didn't sell it to me. It was a secondhand car as well, right?
So let me ask you this question. What are your long-term plans for the vehicle?
Well, I did want to keep it for a long time because it was a secondary vehicle of mine that I was using in the winter, and I did get a good year out of it until this issue did happen. So, yes, I do want to keep it. I am willing to put a reman trans in it, but it is not, it's not cost-effective. They want $500,000 for a reman, right? And then that's not even including the labor, right? So it's just not...
$500,000 what?
No, $5,000, sorry.
Okay, so it's five grand to put a trans in it.
$5,000.
Okay.
Just for the trans.
Right. And that's not labor to put it in?
No.
Whew. And how much do they want? Yeah. And did anybody give you a quote for a valve body or for a solenoid?
Yeah, I got a quote. The mechanic that I went to quoted me $900 for the valve body.
Okay. So it's probably another $1,500 to $1,800 to put the trans in. So the numbers we're comparing here are 1,000 or 7,000.
Yes.
Right. What this is about is how accurate do you know or feel this mechanic that's saying it's a valve body is? Do you think he's right? And I can't judge him. I can't judge it from my seat here.
I will tell you this. I can't either.
Well, let me say this. I can tell you it's a pretty clear-cut diagnosis, all right?
Yes.
It was,
yes.
There were problems with the wiring harness. There's a 14-pin connector coming out of the trans. There was problems where they would, you would see fluid in that connector, and that would create false solenoid codes. There was problems with the harness itself where it would short internally. There was problems where the solenoids went bad. I'll tell you what, Jamar, stay on the line. Let me hold you over. When we'll come back, we'll be a quick 2 minutes. I don't want to rush you. You waited for me, I'll wait for you, brother. Let me just finish up and do what I have to do. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. I'll be back right after this. Don't go away. We're on Name the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. Jamar, you're still there, brother.
Yes, sir.
So, let me ask the hard and simple questions. $7,000. Can you afford it?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Not right away, but
you could do
it. A little bit of hard work, yeah.
So, at 300,000 miles, what is this, a diesel rabbit or a gas rabbit?
No, it doesn't have a 300,000 miles. It has 146, I forget the Canadian and American difference.
Okay.
It has 146.
Okay, so it's got 150. It's got 150,000 miles on it.
Yeah, pretty much.
So diesel or gas motor? Is a diesel car, I assume.
Gas
car. Okay.
2.5 liter.
And the body's in good shape.
Yes, sir.
All right. You're not going to buy a vehicle for $7,000. That's what it
no,
comes.
You're not.
That's what it comes down to. So mm-hmm. it's if in 6 months' time. At 150,000 miles, the weak link in a lot of these cars was the transmission. All right.
Yes.
So it's not, you know, you almost have to think like what you're doing is you're preventing the trans from going bad in 3 years if you're going to have the car that long. You're doing the trans now while you can get one. It's not the worst idea.
Yeah.
It's not the worst idea. If the rest of the vehicle checks out, good brakes, tires, suspension, interior, exterior, you're happy with the car's been reliable for you, you know, $7,000 doesn't buy anything anymore. And you know, this is probably a bad solenoid, okay?
Yeah.
And if you could find somebody, if you wanted to just replace the solenoid, it's probably a $500 repair. I haven't done one in a while. I don't want to be exact because I'm not sure of the price of parts. It's a simple enough test. It's a simple enough procedure. But what you're trying to do is make it reliable and not have to replicate effort. And if it's got a buck and a half on it and it's been banging and shifting hard for a while, if it's got, you know, and then it depends on what kind of service and maintenance that the trans have, the dealer's starting to make some sense. And then does that dealer reman unit come with some kind of a warranty?
I believe. Okay. I'm not sure.
Well, we want to find that out for sure. You know, and I would hope it's at least a 2-year, 24,000-mile warranty, that it's not a 30-day thing. All right?
Yeah.
Not for that kind of money. So, you know, I vote to fix it. I vote that unless you want to roll the dice and try just the valve body, you know, you might as well put a trans in it. The dealer may be seeing something that I'm not seeing. Maybe they're seeing fluid condition. Maybe they're seeing something else in the operation of it by scan tool that tells them, hey, trans is the way to go. But what this is also about is how much do you trust your mechanic? Because you're going from, your choices are either taping the wrist or going for open heart surgery. And if you go for open heart surgery, you're going to be married to them for the next couple of years. And right. And that's something to consider. All right.
Yeah.
You know, a major component repair like that. Or do you want to find a local guy that, you know, specializes in Volkswagen that you can walk in, have the cup of coffee, explain the problem? You know, there's a whole mindset to this. And, you know, that's part of the lesson of auto repair. I'll tell you a quick story and then I'm going to let you go. I had somebody stop by the shop at 20 to 5 on Friday this week. Younger guy, late 30s, early 40s, driving a BMW with run flat tires, and he had a nail in a tire. Now, you can't repair run flat tires. You're not supposed to. All right? You're not supposed to put a plug in them. You're supposed to, that's it. The tire's done. It's scrap because it's a structural issue. And I explained that to him. And I also explained to him that the tread bar indicators were so close, he really needed four tires. You know, and that's not something I nor anyone could realistically do at 20 to 5 on a Friday. You know, my first thought was, where were you all day? It took you this long to get here? you know, and the point I'm trying to make is the relationship goes both ways. You got to figure out what you're looking for. If you're happy at the dealer, stay at the dealer. If you're weary or leery of the dealer, find the guy you can go into at 4:45 on a Friday, and at least he'll talk to you and try to give you the right answers. And maybe not solve it then, but maybe the next day he can, because it's about the relationship. And that's what you need more than anything else, I think, when it comes to auto repair. Make sense?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay. Don't sir me. I work for a living. I just had to say that.
You're right.
You're very welcome, sir. You be well. Let us know what you decide. I'm curious, all right? Drop us a line or give us another call. Let us know how it turns out. All right, Jamar?
All right. Thank you.
You be safe. Bye. Take good care. Listen, it's about the relationship. What are you going to do it? You know. And then I said to Danny, he said, what happened? He said, you're not going to put a plug in? I said, well, it's got run flats. And I said, Danny, I can't put a plug in a run flat tire, not ethically. It's not a safe repair. And then to make it even worse, he's driving on what I consider to be, you know, four tires that are at the tread wear indicators. So now if that car goes out and gets into an accident, gee, who plugged the tire? Oh, that guy Ron up the street. Oh, well, you know, the guy be living in my house, all right? Or his wife will after the estate, after he has a fatality. You know, you got to think like that with auto repair. There are 2-ton missiles going down the road. You've got to just be so careful. It's just the way of the world. So let's pull over and take an early pause for the cause. I'm Ron Anini and the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Nanny, the car doctor, at your service. 855-560-9900 is the phone number. Let's get over to Jim in Georgia, 06 Ford E350 van. Jim, how can I help? Ron Nanny at your service.
Well, I have this van, and it had a lot of play in these steering. So we took it to a mechanic, and they replaced all the front end parts.
Okay.
Because it's got 176,000 miles on it.
All right.
So they gave it new ball joints, tie rods, all the front end parts. And now we got it back, and when we turn the wheel, it wants to stay turned. You have to manually bring it back to straight. So whatever direction you turn the wheel, if you let go of it, it's going to stay turned like that. It's like everything's too tight.
Right. Did you take it back to him and show it to him?
Well, he knew about it. He told me it was like that, and he told me it was a lot worse before he returned it to me. He told me, well, it's better now, and as you drive it, it may loosen up because it's all new parts and everything, and they're probably tight. So if it doesn't loosen up after you drive it a while, let me know about it.
And it wasn't like that beforehand, correct?
Well, beforehand, it had a lot of play in it. You could turn the steering wheel, you know, from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock, and it would keep going straight. So
okay.
There was a lot of play in the steering.
But
that's why we took it in.
But play in the steering wheel is different than returnability, if we can add that word to the English dictionary, right? It would still, if you made a far left turn, the wheel would come back to approximate center, correct? It would return on its own.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
so,
it worked fine.
Yeah, let's not confuse wear with how it returns. So two things come to mind. The first is, well, three actually. Did he replace the steering box or just steering linkage like ball joints and tie rods?
He did not replace the steering box
okay.
that I know of.
That's fine. So, you know, that's good because that eliminates one possibility. Second, could be caster. Caster is a measurement of wheel alignment. If it has incorrect caster set up in the system, it will affect how well the wheel returns. Did he happen to give you a printout after the alignment?
I don't know if I got a printout of that, but he did do an alignment after
okay.
it was all over with.
So, you know, and I'm not saying he did or didn't. I don't know what kind of mechanic this gentleman is that worked on the vehicle, but some mechanics are stuck on, well, they'll set toe and let it go. You know, camber and caster is adjustable on that vehicle. It would require shims. This should be a beam front axle, right, an 06 E350. Does that ring any bells? A beam-style front axle, four ball joints. Did he charge you for?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a beam axle. So this should have upper shims that can be replaced to set camber and caster. My first question, easy question is, was that done? Was it done properly? Second.
Yeah, I'd have to.
And then third would be, yes, I have seen tight ball joints on those vehicles. Sometimes it depends on how they're put in. In terms of are they a little too zealous when they're pressing them in? Sometimes they can distort the housings. Are they centered? I've had occasion where I've got a trick where I will center the ball joint in the knuckle, being careful how I put it in so that I don't put any extra load on it. It's a matter of press talent, so to speak, for a better way to put it. If he were to disconnect the steering linkage up in the air and turn the wheel, is the wheel really hard to turn? If so, then this is a ball joint issue. And, you know, if he used a good brand joint, it may take some time for them to seat in. I would give it 300 miles. If in 300 miles of driving it doesn't get better, then it's got to go back because there's got to be a better solution. How long have you had the vehicle back from him?
We've probably put about 300 miles on it since we got it back, maybe more.
I think it's time to go back and
maybe
say
more.
Something, you know? I will pick on a particular brand, and I'll do it right here because I've had the experience. If they're Moog ball joints, M-O-O-G,
yeah.
On that particular application, I've had issues. I don't know why. Where I've had to be a little fastidious in how I install them. I've had to be a little selective on picking the joint in terms of where did it come from. I've had some issues with them for a variety of reasons, but they seem to have straightened them out. That's why I'm curious to see what he ended up using here, because this is the first, if this is Moog, then this is the first time I've heard of the problem in 2 years, and I thought this problem was behind the industry. So I'd go back and talk to him. I'd go back and talk to him. You know, it's not right. It's got to get fixed. Either that, or he's got to try a different brand of joint. He's not going to be happy hearing that, but that's the reality of it. You know what? Every once in a while, you just, you know, the bear eats you, and you got to do it over again until you figure out what went wrong.
Yeah.
Those are the three concerns I have.
Things that you mentioned.
So, all right, sir.
If you all right, well, thanks.
You're welcome. If you need me, I'm here.
Thanks for your advice. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Joe. Jim, Joe. So, 6 and 1, half a dozen of the other. Research Kathy is hard at it again, by the way. See, she's going to get me in trouble. She sent me this article that Tesla supercharging costs have quadrupled overnight. Tesla recently announced that it would be opening supercharging use to other brands of EVs in a bid to increase revenue by billions. This is great news for owners of cars like the Porsche Taycan, as the EV giant has more than 25,000 of these charging stations across the globe. This is all part of the brand's aim to expand even further, but not everything a brand does always benefits the consumer. The company has been constantly hiking the price of the number of its vehicles, and now the price it costs you to charge your vehicle has been hiked too, but it's not entirely a bad thing. This was in carbuzz.com. To understand the pricing update, we first need to understand what the previous structure was like and why it needed updating. And it goes on to cite how Tesla is charging their per-minute rates split into two tiers, and now there's four tiers, and they're just trying to, you know, justify why they're going to quadruple the cost of supercharging an electric vehicle over the period of time. So something to look forward to. Hey, the price of gas goes up. I guess the price of electricity has to go up, too. It's not like we can get around cheap or for free. Not anymore. So 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. I'm back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. Let's do some readings off the Facebook page. I see you. Is that Wills? Wills R is writing in. Hey, Ron, how do you feel about the plug-in AFM delete on Chevy trucks? I personally have an 08 5.3-liter Silverado, 160,000 miles, no problems. What are your thoughts? Listen, I'm not a fan of advanced fuel management, where GM is dropping off cylinders in their V8s to make them run like 4 cylinders, 6 cylinders, and so forth. I think it's a little bit of chicanery. I would go to great lengths, me personally, myself, to avoid a vehicle such as that. So if you've got a delete kit, and there's a bunch of them out there that has a good track record that works, I'd say give it a shot. I think it's less wear and tear on the vehicle. And if fuel economy isn't your thing and it still passes and meets the emission standards or whatever they're required, that we're not breaking any laws, then I say do it. You know, again, it depends on which kit exactly you're using. There's a ton of choices, which tells me the market thinks like I do and that those systems are problematic. The modulated displacement of GM vehicles from an 8 down to a 4 and a 6 cylinder. So by all means, don't be gun shy. Just something to do, without a doubt. So, you know, just my way of thinking. I just want to touch on somebody else was commenting about the article we just put up on the Facebook page about Toyota. Take note when you read that. That came out last month, October 21st. And it is an article that discusses some comments made by the Toyota chief scientist Gil Pratt at the Reuters event, the Automotive Summit. His comments during a discussion on electric vehicles are pretty much in line with those made by Toyota president Toyota, T-O-Y-O-D-A, Akio, if I'm saying that right. I apologize if not. Toyota and other company officials have said that electric vehicles will play a greater role in reducing emissions, but other solutions should be used. Toyota's gasoline electric hybrid models or hydrogen-powered fuel cell electric vehicles. You know, I got to think Toyota knows something about cars. They've been around a while doing it, and they make some good points. So I guess the electric vehicle future is here. It's a question of how smoothly will it go, And will they be able to come up with all the answers that we expect them to have in what is now a very short 13 or 14 years? It's not far off for the state of California. That's where it'll hit first. The article that we put up on Facebook also points out Toyota has invested $13.5 billion on electric vehicle batteries through the year 2030, which is modest, the article points out, in comparison to GM and Ford, which are spending around $30 billion each through 2025 to electrify their vehicle line. So you got to wonder, they're spending it all. I hope it works. I'm Ron Anani and the Car Doctor, reminding you until the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.